Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
There's a good chance that things are never going to get better morally in our country. There's a good chance that things are going to continue to slide into depravity. But this is what we need to know. It's in the darkest places that the light of the gospel shines the brightest. And as our world continues to drift back into heathenism and all of its accompanying perversity, may we, like Paul, continue to boldly proclaim Christ and Him crucified as man's only hope.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian is continuing his study in the book of Romans. Join us as Pastor Brian begins in Romans chapter 1, verses 5 through 15, in a message titled, The Gospel and Rome. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
So it was culturally Greek, and the Romans, although they were proud to be Romans, they thought of themselves culturally as Greeks. And of course, the Greeks thought that their culture was the best culture, the superior culture. So in other words, if you perceived yourself to be a Greek, you perceived yourself to be part of that special group of people, that superior group, as contrasted with the barbarians. Who were the barbarians? The barbarians were everybody who wasn't Greek. So it was as simple as that. Greek culture, we have a great illustration of it in our time today. American culture has permeated so much of the world today. You know, you go all over the world today, and even in places where the last thing the leadership wants is an American influence, it's there. We have just made our way into every nook and cranny on the planet, practically. You know, it's funny sometimes when you're traveling and maybe even in more third world kinds of places and you see the clothes that the people are wearing. And of course, a lot of times they're sort of knockoffs of, you know, the real thing. But nevertheless, they've got their designer T-shirts on and so forth. But it's all the stuff that's being produced and promoted right here in America. And to the dismay of many leaders. As I said, American culture just sort of continues to keep pressing into these different societies. You hear sometimes that there's a lot of anti-Americanism around the world today. And sometimes people would even say, oh, you know, be careful when you're traveling, watch out. They don't like Americans over in certain parts. You know, I think that is only true on the political level. It's not true on the cultural level. It's not true on the personal level. Wherever I've gone in the world, people are happy to meet me as an American. And they want to know all about America. They want to talk about all the kinds of things that we don't even talk about ourselves. One of the great advantages that I have nowadays is I can tell people, you know, because they always ask you where you live. And, you know, trying to explain to people you live in Orange County, that's kind of a difficult thing. You say Los Angeles, most people know Los Angeles. Orange County, you kind of say it's a suburb. But you know what? I've solved the problem. This is the easiest and the best way to communicate where I live. I live just down the street from Disneyland. Everybody knows where Disneyland is. They've either been there, or they have, you know, they've read about it, they've heard about it, they've seen it on the internet, they know where Disneyland is. So if you're ever struggling to let somebody know where you live, just tell them you live near Disneyland, and that will solve the problem. So it's a similar thing. The Greek culture had just dominated that part of the world at that time. And so everybody outside of the Greek culture were considered barbarians. And the word barbarian came from the way the Greeks heard these other non-Greek speaking people when they spoke. That's what it sounded like to them. It just sounded like barbar. So the word barbarian kind of just originated out of that. But then Paul says that he is a debtor both to the wise and the unwise. You know, the thing about the gospel is it's for everybody. It can humble the most brilliant intellect, and it can elevate the simplest mind. It's an amazing thing. And we find all throughout history, there have been both the wise and the unwise. There have been the highly educated. There have been the extremely intelligent, intellectually brilliant minds that have embraced the gospel and embraced Christ as a little child would. And we could go through a long list of people like that. And right down to this very day, there are many highly intelligent, highly educated people in our world today who are believers in Jesus Christ. But then, of course, the most simple-minded person can also receive Christ and know the gospel and be given understanding by God that actually increases their capacities mentally and so forth. I've met so many people who, on the one hand, are very simple in that they've never really been educated to speak of, or they're not really cultured people necessarily, but you find in them and their love for Jesus and the simplicity of that love, sometimes you find a wisdom and a brilliance that's just shocking. I've had this experience over and over again, just listening to somebody and hearing the wisdom that's pouring out of their mouths and thinking, wow, I know this person. I know their background. I know where they came from. And I know that the Lord taught them this stuff. That's what God does. And it's such a wonderful thing. And this is where Paul's at. He's ready to minister to anybody and everybody. He's ready to go to Mars Hill and speak to the philosophers. He's ready to be in the household of Caesar, speaking to the servants in Caesar's home. But he's also perfectly happy to go along the riverside there in Philippi and minister to Lydia and those few women that are there. He's happy to reach out to the jailer during that same time there. And as Paul would say about himself, that he went about ministering to small and to great, because the gospel is for everyone. And doesn't matter how brilliant you are, doesn't matter how educated you are, you will find in the gospel depths you can never fathom. You will find things that all of your learning could never even begin to compare to. And in the gospel for the simple person, God will take that person and raise them to heights that are sometimes just amazing, sometimes absolutely amazing. So, this is where Paul's at. He is a debtor to the Greeks, the barbarians, to the wise, to the unwise. And here it is. So, as much as is in me, I am ready to preach the gospel to you who are in Rome also.
We'll return to Pastor Brian's message in just a moment. But first, we'd like to remind you to visit our website, backtobasicsradio.com. You can download a podcast of today's message or stream it for free. So take a moment and go to our website and be sure to sign up for Pastor Brian's weekly devotional. Now let's continue with today's message.
Paul says, I want to come. I've been wanting to come. I have been praying to come. I've been hindered, but I want to be there. And this is what I want to do. Ultimately, I want to come and preach the gospel to you. Now, this is interesting to me because although, of course, Paul would have had a desire to preach the gospel to the masses of unbelievers in Rome, remember who he's addressing here. He's not addressing unbelievers. He's writing this letter to those who are loved by God, those who are called by God. He's writing this letter to the saints. He's saying to the saints, he's saying to the believers, He's saying, I want to come to Rome to preach the gospel to you. Now, the reason that I find that interesting is because we generally think of preaching as being directed toward unbelievers. And we think of teaching as being primarily directed toward the saints. And that is true to some extent, but I think based on what Paul says here, there's also a place for preaching to believers, and that's what he is desiring to do. And so from this statement, it's obvious that Paul's idea of preaching the gospel includes more than stating certain historical facts about Jesus Christ to the unconverted. This is indeed preaching the gospel, and to some degree, that is what the four evangelists, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, did. But it's apparent from Paul's epistles that preaching the gospel, now here's the point, preaching the gospel, according to Paul, also includes explaining to the converted the full implication of those facts. See, Paul says, I want to come to Rome to you believers, to you Christians. I want to come and preach the gospel to you. Paul's desire was to give the Christians there a full exposition of the facts concerning Jesus Christ and what he accomplished through his death and resurrection. That's what Paul wanted to do. He wanted to go there and basically tell them everything that he knew. He wanted them to have a full orbed understanding of the gospel. He did not want their understanding to be lacking. He didn't want it to be undimensional. He wanted it to be multidimensional. He wanted them to understand all of the implications of this gospel of Christ dying for their sins and rising from the dead. It's really amazing how little gospel is necessary to get a person saved. It's amazing. I mean, there's such dynamite in the smallest portions of the gospel. I have heard stories, testimonies of people who have gotten saved on the smallest amount of information. Now, some people would say, oh, that can't happen. I think it can. Because remember, God is the one who's behind this gospel. And it's just, you know, just one little seed getting in. But okay, so here's a person, they get saved on a very little amount of the gospel, and then what needs to happen? Well, they need to begin to grow, and of course, they obviously need to go beyond that small seed of understanding. They need to begin to fully comprehend all that this actually means and implies. That's what Paul's talking about. I want to come to Rome. I want to make sure that you understand all of the implications. I know you know that Christ died on the cross for your sins. I know you know he rose from the dead, but I want to come and tell you what that means, what it means in its deepest sense. That's what he's really communicating to the believers in Rome. And he will shortly begin to do that. But as we wrap things up tonight, one last thing to just touch on, and it's Rome itself. Twice here in these verses, Paul has spoken specifically of Rome, or three times. And the question that I want to bring before you is, what was Rome like? We know it was the capital of the world at the time. It was the great empire that dominated the whole of the Mediterranean world. And for all practical purposes, it was the ruling power on the earth. Some people would say, oh, but you know, in the Orient, there were the Chinese dynasties and all of that. This is true. But Rome, for all practical purposes, ruled the world. So we know about the great engineering minds. We know about the great transportation system that the Romans developed, the roads that they made throughout the known world. We know about the aqueducts. We know about Roman law and how we even operate to some extent from it today. We know about the great structures. You can even go to Rome today, and some of those great buildings from back in this period of time are still standing today. We can see the Colosseum and different places like that. So we know all of that about Rome. But the question that I think is more pertinent is, what was Rome like morally? What was Rome like morally? Well, of course, Rome, we've also heard that it was decadent and it was a very morally corrupted culture, which is true. You could always find exceptions to the rule, no doubt. You could always find good people here and there. But generally speaking, morally, Rome was about as corrupt as anything could ever be. And I would venture to say that it was more corrupt than what we know of corruption today. We're doing our best to get there ourselves, but we haven't quite gotten there yet, thank God. But just a couple of things, and there's a reason that I want to close with this, but just a couple of insights. We can find one right here in the first chapter in verses 29 through 31, which we'll get to later. Paul kind of gives a general description of life at the time in Rome and, of course, throughout that whole region of the world. It would have been true everywhere. How did he describe it? He said that it was filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity, envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. There was gossip, slander, God-haters, people who were insolent, arrogant, and boastful, those who invented ways of doing evil, those who were disobedient to their parents. They are senseless, faithless, heartless, and ruthless. That is a general description of the condition of the culture at the time of the writing of this epistle. Suetonius, the biographer of the emperors, wrote these things about a number of the emperors, and gets a little bit racy, but I think we need to know where they were at. Tiberius. Remember, Tiberius was in power when Jesus was ministering and crucified. Tiberius often had nude women wait on the tables at which he dined. He also had male and female prostitutes openly engage in group sex as entertainment for his pleasure. It was also said that he surrounded himself with young boys that he used sexually. Caligula lived a licentious life and was given to habitual incest with his sisters. He loved to engage in sex while he ate, and he often had people tortured during many of his sexual escapades. Nero had at least two boys, Sporus and Pythagoras, with whom he engaged in regular sexual activity. Galba, Nero's successor, had at least one male lover. Titus loved to party with the catamites. Catamites were the young boys used for homosexual pleasure, and the eunuchs. Hadrian had numerous affairs with women, but also had a young man named Antonius as his sexual companion. Commodus, along with 300 concubines, also had 300 young boys to satisfy his sexual appetite. Heterosexual and homosexual depictions were openly portrayed on household items such as frescoes, lamps, bowls, and cups. One historian said, "Imagine drinking from an elegant silver cup with scenes of male-to-male intercourse on it, or visiting someone's house and seeing fresco paintings depicting sexual activity on the walls of the best rooms." Now, we have examples that still exist today of these things in Pompeii. So, what do we see here? We see that the Romans conquered the world, but they could not conquer their own lust and were ultimately consumed by it. Sounds like the Europeans, sounds like the British, sounds like the Americans. But this is my point. This is why I share this. This is the world the apostles were sent out into with the gospel. This is the world they went into. You see, what's happening in our culture today is we are just drifting back. You know, there's a group of political people today that call themselves progressives. They think that we're moving forward. No, no. Be clear about one thing. We're not going forward at all. We're going backward. We're going backward. We're going back into paganism. We're going back into heathenism. And as you go back into paganism, as the cultural effects of Christianity begin to disappear, you're seeing all of these things that were prevalent at the time that Jesus came and sent the apostles out into the world. You're seeing them resurface once again. So the world that we are living in and moving deeper into is a world that is very much like the world of the apostles' days. This is the environment, secondly, that a church was birthed in. This is the environment. You see, I think in some ways we've become too sanitized because we've had this wonderful experience of such a great influence of Christianity upon the culture. It has sanitized the culture to a large degree, but that is disappearing rapidly, as we can all see. But I think what's happened too in the church, and it's not as bad today as it was in previous generations, but we still have sort of a sanitized view of culture, and we still think it should be a certain way. This is the way it is. This is the way it always has been, without God, without Christ, without the gospel. But this is what the gospel is for. It's for these kinds of cultures. It's for these kinds of people. That's why there was a church that was birthed in Rome, because that's where the sin was. That's where all the people were. That's where the gospel has its greatest impact. And so these are the people that Paul was anxious to preach the gospel to. So what am I saying? I'm saying this. There's a good chance that things are never going to get better morally in our country. There's a good chance that things are going to continue to slide into depravity. But this is what we need to know. It's in the darkest places that the light of the gospel shines the brightest. And as our world continues to drift back into heathenism and all of its accompanying perversity, may we, like Paul, continue to boldly proclaim Christ and Him crucified as man's only hope. You see, that's what we have to understand today. These debauched rulers that we're reading about, and you know, generally speaking, as the leaders go, so go the people. When you see cultures that are inundated with all of this kind of perversity and all of this, know this. That where sin abounded, another quote for Romans, where sin abounded, grace abounded much more. And Paul wanted to go to Rome just like we would want to go somewhere where we hear of dark, dark places where God is doing a great work and the light is shining brightly. We're like, yeah. Man, I love hearing those reports. I love hearing those stories of how God's working in those places. That's how Paul was. I want to go to Rome, that center of decadence, that center of perversion, that center of all wickedness. I want to go there and preach the gospel, because that's where the gospel does its greatest work among sinners. So let's remember that as we study Romans and as we live in this world that's sliding deeper and deeper into depravity, we've got the answer. Nobody else does. We've got the answer. The answer is the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes. And that is what we'll pick up on next week.
Thanks for joining us today on Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Brodersen. I'd like to remind you that you can get today's message and any additional resource designed to encourage you in your walk with the Lord at our website, backtobasicsradio.com. You can also follow Pastor Brian on Twitter at BackTOB Radio or like us on our Facebook page. We enjoy hearing from you. We would also like to send you a gift for supporting Back to Basics. Our gift for this month for a donation of any size is A.W. Tozer's The Knowledge of the Holy. This book illuminates God's attributes from wisdom to grace to mercy, and in doing so, restores the majesty and wonder of God in the hearts and minds of all of us. The Knowledge of the Holy is a modern classic of Christian testimony and devotion. The details for obtaining this month's book and all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll return tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Romans. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.